Well, it's just a pleasure to welcome Charles Hughes Smith back to the show of Two Minds. Just a fantastic must-read blog, plus, of course, a best-selling author. Welcome back.
Thank you, Chris. It's my pleasure.
You've really, like some of us, caught Bitcoin crypto fever, but it seems like investors today really only fall into one of two camps. They either get Bitcoin or they don't. It's interesting to watch, I think, as the light bulbs start to, you know, warm up. Tell us what turned that light on for Charles Hughes Smith.
Right. Well, that's a great question, Chris, because we all have a learning curve, or the vast majority of us have a very steep learning curve in trying to understand what cryptocurrencies are and their functionality or their utility. And for me, the light bulb, I knew about Bitcoin. Readers, of course, are always much smarter than I am. So they told me about it back in 2010 and 11 and 12, and I'd been following it sort of academically. But I hired some translators to translate one of my books located in South America, and I needed to pay them in Bitcoin because there's really no better way to transfer funds to pay for people doing digital services globally except cryptocurrencies. And so then I started to realize how easy it was to pay people globally for doing work for you. And the fee was, I mean, the transaction fee was something like $4.50 compared to, you know, trying to wire, you know, money, and then it takes days and costs a lot of money. And, you know, it's just the utility value is really high. And that's what I think a lot of people don't understand that haven't used it yet.
The computers that are recording our voices here today have actually been dedicated and optimized. The GPUs, that is, the graphical processors, have been optimized. We've got a GTX 1070 and a Zotac 1060, which is weaker, but it's one of my favorites simply because it has so many CUDA cores. What's ironic is I used to run the studio here off my 1 kilowatt 10 solar panel. It's about 1,000 watt production. You know, fast forward a couple of years, things have changed so much. We're actually paying for the studio electricity and heating right now simply with the computers that are recording our voices. Actually mining Zcash right now, hashing about 800 or 900 sols. You know, Bitcoin, it may be a store of value. That's debatable. Probably the greatest transfer of wealth in maybe 200 years, but it's definitely a network. I've heard arguments on both sides I'd like to get into. Nassim Taleb pointed out this could be worth zero. It could be worth 100,000. It's impossible to truly short. The more overlooked aspect, the real value, the tangible intrinsic value of Bitcoin and the cryptos stems from A, the number of users, and B, the average daily transactions. So we're looking at a revolution here on many levels, not just as a currency. It's really the sum total.
I think you did a great summary by touching on a variety of the sources of value in Bitcoin and to some degree the other major cryptocurrencies, which is there's a utility value, there's a network effect value, there's a store of value also in the fact that Bitcoin and most of the other major cryptos are limited in the number of coins that will be issued. And of course, as we see central banks creating 14 trillion units of their currencies out of thin air, we start wondering what's the consequence of actually having a currency or a commodity, whatever, however you want to describe it, that's intrinsically limited by the math, as opposed to a little click of meets in a secret room, opaquely decides how much currency to issue and to whom. That's the central bank system. A little click of folks in a secret room deciding how much currency to create, to whom to distribute it to.
As you pointed out, it's an inefficient, it's a non-transparent, or as you say, opaque way of distributing wealth. I'm referring to the fiat system. And ultimately, it fails. I mean, to any, I think, student of the Austrian school knows that Mises and von Hayek and all the rest have done a seminal job pointing out how these systems will fail. And are we seeing in real time de facto failure of fiat currencies? This revolution in Bitcoin, is it emblematic of the end of paper money?
Well, that's a great question, Chris. Some proponents like Max Keiser are saying that it's not so much that Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies are rising so much, it's that the fiat currencies are losing value relative to the cryptocurrencies. And so that's an interesting point to consider, is that where is the value proposition in a currency that can be generated in the trillions at will? But it's centralized. In other words, we don't get to pony up, get our $1 billion of free money from the Federal Reserve, right? It only goes to this centralized private banking sector and financiers. And so what I liked about your example of the way that you're mining cryptocurrency as we speak, that element of it is very decentralized. In other words, it's not only distributed, the blockchain's not only distributed over a universe of processors, there's a lot of ways for individuals or households or communities to start participating in this at the ground level.
Is this a bubble? You know, I think we both could probably make a case.
I think we have two dynamics in play that are overlaid on each other, so it's hard to separate. There is a speculative frenzy in the crypto space. In other words, you see it in tokens that are of, let's just say, questionable value, you know, going up fivefold in a few days. You know, that kind of speculative typically marks euphoric type of speculative bubbles, right? But if we set aside the speculative bubble part and the sort of frenzy, there is real value here, and that is still in development. In other words, I've already used Bitcoin to conduct business. It works for me. I'm convinced of its utility value from my own experience. Many other people haven't had that yet, and other people are waiting for things like the Ethereum smart contract system to become present in everyday life, right? So we're not quite there yet on a lot of the uses that people foresee for blockchain technologies and cryptocurrencies. But the potential is so obvious that we have to kind of separate out that real value from the speculative frenzy part of the thing. And so you could say, well, yeah, the bubbles in lesser known cryptocurrencies or tokens, that could blow up and go the way of all bubbles, while the high utility, high value primary cryptos, you know, Monero, Dash, Ethereum, Bitcoin, to name a few, possibly Ripple, once these establish themselves in the real economy, then their utility value and their network value will only increase. As to what that price will be, I don't know. I did a calculation and put an estimate on Bitcoin back when it was about $1,000. I put a target of 17,000. And you might say, well, how did I just do that, reach into a hat of, you know, random numbers? And I said, no, I thought, I based that on if 0.1% of the financial wealth sloshing around the global economy found a home in Bitcoin, then that would lead to a price of 17,000 per Bitcoin. It just so happens that it did hit 17,000 and many years earlier than I anticipated.
We are looking now at Bitcoin as digital gold. And so we have about $7 to $8 trillion gold market. Right now, we're only in the neighborhood of $250 billion. So, you know, back of the envelope math puts you around 30-fold higher, 30 to 32-fold higher as a potential target. And admittedly, that's a stretch.
Well, that's a great, I think, contextualization of the question you've raised, which is how do you value something that's such a new technology that has such great potential and is yet unknown, right? And so the way that you described it is one excellent way, which is more of technological extrapolation of value based on metrics. My idea was based on a more financial metric, which was to take the pool of financial assets that are floating around the world economy, which is around 300 trillion. That's the total value of stocks, bonds, and derivatives, mortgage-backed securities, you know, you name it, all the financial wealth. Real estate's another 200 trillion. So roughly 500 trillion in total financial assets out there. If 1% decided to find a home in Bitcoin, just the financial wealth, not the real estate, then you're talking about, you know, 1% of 300 trillion, which would be $1 trillion, right? And so, right now, yeah, Bitcoin's market cap is 250 to 300 million or something, right? So, you know, just kind of back of the envelope, you're talking about a tenfold increase with just a little tiny bit of all the global wealth.
And you're exactly right. That would be a tenfold increase because you were talking about 300 trillion, roughly 1%, multiply 300 billion today times 10.
Yeah. And so the thing I think that I would like to make two quick points here for you to, you know, we're used to fiat currency being both a store of value and a means of exchange. Those are two functions of money. But I can foresee, and other people see the same thing, that the cryptocurrency space, there might be a few currencies such as Bitcoin itself that are more a store of value, that they're not going to be traded for a cup of coffee. They'll be saved for larger transactions, and there'll be other forms of cryptocurrency which are used for day-to-day consumer.
Has Bitcoin outgrown itself? Because remember, the original promise was cheap, quick transactions. Now we're looking at $4, $5, $10 for what? You can't buy a cup of coffee. The transaction fee is $2, $3, $4, $5 if you're lucky, and it's going to take 45 minutes to make the transaction. So you are right. Now, Bitcoin Cash is the alternative, and I think you actually sort of touched on that. You started to before the discussion. Probably an easier block size to mine, a better hash rate, facilitating smaller transactions with much lower fees. But I question whether or not that will hold out for long, because as these increase in price, they tend to increase in difficulty in the hash rates and the mining, you know, slowly inches up the transaction costs, and we find ourselves right back where we were. But you know what? There's an infinite number of alternatives here. My favorite is Interzone, which ITZ, which I've got everyone buying. I think last time I checked, it was a fraction of a penny. I think there's a global revolution that's going to take off around Interzone. The secret is that everybody can have a masternode who wants one for like $100, and you get instantaneous transactions with zero costs. And I believe that the developing world, Africa, the Southern Hemisphere in particular, Asia, pennies really do matter. Southern India, your only bank account is on an iPhone, that, you know, and anyone can have a bank account who can walk into a library barefoot and set up an Interzone wallet. They will fill that void. Sure, you can slice and dice it up into a Satoshi, the smallest increment, 8 decimal places. You still have to pay the hefty transaction.
Well, Chris, I think what your point is excellent, because people who are poor, they're partly poor because they have high transaction costs and no access to credit or banking. And so these micro payment cryptocurrencies that you're describing are a key part of reducing poverty globally.
I'd like to make a comparison with gold, and that is that when we start to compare the number of Bitcoin, which is almost exactly 16.7 million outstanding, for a Bitcoin to be valued against an ounce of gold, it's about $1.2 million per Bitcoin. Trying to convince people that a digital signature in the ether realm is somehow equivalent to what they have stored under the floorboards in their house in a fireproof safe, that's a hard sell. But as I think you've already alluded to earlier in the discussion, there are some stark similarities between Bitcoin and precious metals.
Chris, that's a great topic, and you outlined it just right, which is that it is a hard sell. Naturally, we all feel that tangible stuff has a reality that digital stuff doesn't quite match, right? So gold and silver have tangible qualities, and they have time-tested, you know, 3,000 years or 5,000 years of being used as money and all that. And so how can a digital string be more valuable than something tangible? And I think that my basic answer is you have to look at the utility value of money. Money is a social construct. We assign value to things to act as money. And as we all know, this over time and human history, this includes salt, cowrie shells, notch sticks, giant rocks 6 feet high with a hole carved in the middle. All kinds of stuff acts as money because it's part of our social construct. And so it's we can't really say that gold and silver are intrinsically money. They're money in our society, in our system, but not necessarily universally. And so in the same sense, Bitcoin may appear worthless in certain contexts or certain economies, but in other economies, it can have value because of the social nature of money itself. So I know that's sort of a long-winded way of saying money is much more contingent than we might think. And so we have to look at the utility value of the money. The thing about cryptocurrencies is it's mathematically limited. And so that's a feature that fiat currencies don't have. And so you could say that's similar to gold in that there's a finite amount of gold. There's still some in the ground to be dug out. It certainly can't be created in infinite quantities. The other part of it, though, is the means of exchange, the utility value. And gold just, I couldn't really pay somebody in South America with gold. I would have to have an account in which gold was represented by a fiat currency and then go through that whole commotion, right? I wasn't really going to pay somebody with a sliver of gold. And so, you know, gold works well as a store of value.
I'd like to share a comment by probably in the top of the investment realm. He's a true intellectual and now a professor, in Nassim Taleb, fooled by randomness and so many others, anti-fragility, black swan, how could I forget? He points out that this can no way be a bubble. In fact, he notes that it's mathematically an impossibility for Bitcoin to be in a bubble, although I agree with you, there's an awful lot of signs that might say otherwise, and simply points out that there's no number that you could rule out here, that it could drop just as quickly to 5,000 as it could fly to 100,000. You might say one of the financial world's greatest skeptics. He doesn't believe in really owning anything that has any risk at all, claiming that this could be a $100,000 Bitcoin.
I'm so glad you brought him up because, as you say, as a skeptic of all things conventional, you really have to pay attention to what Taleb says and at least analyze it and put it through the mill. You can't just reject it out of hand. And so I think that's my pitch to everybody who is currently convinced that this whole crypto thing is just a bubble that's gonna go away. Look beneath the surface before you reject the whole thing as a bubble.
Final, just mini question for you. I'm sure you were around during the dot-com frenzy, 97, 98, 99, 2000. Are we 95, 96, or the summer of 99?
Yeah, it feels a lot like the end of the quarter four of 1999, like we're a quarter or two away from the blow-off top and the end of the euphoria.
Any parting comments and or contact information?
Well, Chris, I really appreciate a chance to talk about one of my favorite topics, which is cryptocurrencies, and we've hardly touched the surface, really. Come visit me at oftwominds.com. Everything's free.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.